are you?
I'm doing well, Alex. Yourself?
Good. We are here to talk about something practical and useful, estate planning.
Exactly.
Talk to me like I'm a four-year-old and tell me what estate planning is, Mark.
Well, estate planning is the sum of a lot of different documents that are not just for what happens to your assets after you pass, but also what happens to your assets while you are here, your health care, your stuff, and who can control it and how it should be controlled, both during your lifetime and afterwards.
Is it all? I assume that the word estate assumes that we're talking about assets, but does estate planning also encompass directives, directions on matters that are not asset related?
Absolutely. It includes healthcare proxies and living wills, which deal with your health and how you want to be treated while you're here.
Guardianship of minor kids.
Guardianships, both not only of minor kids, but also of yourself. You can pick your own guardian if you know that your facilities are starting to leave you. Dementia or Alzheimer's, you can go ahead and choose your guardian before you are unable to do so.
Yeah. Is it the case that you can use estate planning to not only decide who will take care of your kids, but how they will be raised?
To a certain extent. You can certainly make your wishes known, but it's really sometimes up to a judge to decide whether or not those wishes are going to be enforceable.
And in the children's best interest.
Correct.
So you talked a minute ago about documents. What are the basic estate planning documents that you and your world use, rely on, draft?
Certainly. The most basic of them all is a will. Then there's a power of attorney for financial reasons, a power of attorney for health care. There's a living will. There's something that the U.S. government has now created called the HIPAA waiver. And there's also trusts. Those are the most basic ones. But as you discussed, there's things like guardianships and everything else that are ancillary.
Yeah. For folks that think HIPAA refers to hippopotami, what is a HIPAA waiver? And is hippopotami, in fact, the plural of hippopotamus?
I don't know about hippopotamus or hippopotami, but HIPAA waiver is Health Insurance Portability and Privacy Act, which basically says that no entity can give away your own personal health care without your permission.
Your own personal health care
information. Everything from your treatment to your bills to what drugs you're on, all of that.
Let's just go through. I presume that the will is the most common, the most basic of estate planning documents. Is that a fair statement?
It's certainly the most well known, and it is the most basic one.
What is it?
So, in the end, a will is something that you write down during your lifetime to say, this is all the stuff I own, and this is who I want to give it to when I die.
Does everyone need a will?
The simple answer is yes. There are always exceptions, but generally speaking, yes, you do.
Okay, why?
The choices are, if you have a will and you die, you have made a decision on where all of your stuff goes. It's within your control, your power to do so. If you don't have a will and you die, then you die what's called intestate, meaning without a will. And then the court and the state law decides who gets your stuff. And there's a whole chain of people who get it in a certain order.
So if I die without a will, the state statute decides what order of people, if alive, get my stuff. I presume that is not optimal.
So there are certain cases, such as a couple who have been married for a long time, and one of them is in ill health, and they don't have a will, they have no children, and no other heirs. If the sickly person dies, the other spouse is going to get everything, no matter what. The probate court, that's what the formula says. And so is it necessary for them to have one? No. Is it good to have one? Absolutely.
You just said probate. What's probate?
So probate is a process that first of all, probate gets a bad name. People try to avoid probate all the time, and there are reasons to avoid it, but it's not a bad thing. Probate is a legal process that looks at a person's estate documents, or if they don't have estate documents, at their estate, which is everything they have when they die, and decides who gets it. They read through the will and says, these people have it, and they make sure that no one is taking any of your stuff after you've passed without your permission.
Some assets, I believe, are probate assets. Some assets are considered non-probate assets. What makes an asset a probate asset versus a non-probate asset, and what does that mean?
So a probate asset is anything that does not have a beneficiary to it. Your life insurance policy, for instance, is a non-probate asset because you have designated a individual to be your beneficiary and get your life insurance policy. However, if you don't have a beneficiary on your life insurance policy or the beneficiary has already died, then it goes to your estate and becomes a probate asset. A probate asset is anything that the court will decide who gets it,
right?
Either through your will or through the intestate divisions.
So you talked about life insurance as potentially either a probate asset or a non-probate asset, depending on whether the beneficiary is identified. I assume the same is true for retirement accounts.
Absolutely. Retirement accounts are non-probate assets unless there's not a beneficiary designated. That's the same goes with pension plans. Bank accounts, however, are the exact opposite. They're presumed to be probate assets, but you can go to a bank and make it a non-probate asset in one of two ways. You can designate it as a transferable upon death or payable upon death account. So when you pass away, you are naming a successor to take over that bank account, or you can make it a joint account with someone.
So when we went through the list of basic estate planning documents, you mentioned a power of attorney. What is a power of attorney?
So there's two basic styles of power of attorney. One is for financial purposes, and one's for healthcare purposes. The most common one is power of attorney for financial powers, and literally it says that the person that you designate that power of attorney can do anything with your money that you could do. There are fiduciary limits, meaning that they have to do it in the best interest of the person they are the power of attorney for, but they can buy and sell real estate, they can file your taxes, they can write checks, open bank accounts, pay bills, just about anything, unless you make within the power of attorney a particular carve out saying they can do everything except these things.
What's a durable power of attorney versus, I guess, a non-durable?
So the term is springing. A durable power of attorney becomes effective immediately upon signing. So if I make you my power of attorney, as soon as I sign that paper, you could go ahead and write a check from my account, sign your name, and put POA, and it's a valid power of attorney. A springing power of attorney usually has a reason in which it springs to life. For instance, if a court determines that you are no longer mentally competent and you have signed a springing power of attorney, the power of attorney becomes effective when the court says you are no longer competent.
You mentioned a healthcare power of attorney, but then we also earlier talked about a living will. What's the difference between those two?
So a healthcare power of attorney is broader than a living will. A healthcare power of attorney allows someone to make medical decisions, any medical decision you could make if you could not make it at that time, such as an elective surgery, a medication, if you are no longer mentally competent to be able to be committed or take certain drugs. A living will is strictly for end-of-life decisions. So if you are terminally ill or permanently unconscious, the healthcare power of attorney can make some decisions, but the living will is really your expression of what you want to have happen during end-of-life decisions.
So, Mark, why does any of this matter? Why is it important for either me as just a person for myself and my own estate plan, or me as the son of my parents? why is it important for me to think about these things and to have discussions with my parents or my loved ones about these end of life issues?
So I'll give a personal example. Some time ago, my mother was diagnosed with cancer, and she never talked about end of life decisions. And she had a long battle with cancer and unfortunately lost that battle, but she never talked to my dad, myself, my sister about what she wanted end of life decisions. And the last 3 months that she was on this earth, she really couldn't do anything. She was confined to bed. She couldn't talk. She couldn't communicate. And the doctors were compelled to keep her alive through some heroic means, which included having to have her heart restarted at least once. A living will allows you to not be put into that position. So if you do not want to be at the end of your life, confined to a bed, unable to communicate or anything else, you can have a living will that says, do not resuscitate me if this happens. Just give me comfort care, which is hydration and pain relief. But you don't need to take heroic measures to keep me, to extend my death is really what you're cutting out.
From a cost perspective, what are we talking about here? Basic estate plan to the more complex ones.
So on the, I'll start with the most complex. There's a lot of reasons to do estate planning, including sheltering assets, making sure assets go to one or two generations in the future, protect assets from former spouses, or Medicare and Medicaid planning to shelter assets so the government doesn't take your money when you go into a nursing home. And those can run from well over $10,000. That's on the very complex end. For just a basic estate plan without a trust, it's about $1,000 for an individual and about $1,400 for a married couple. That's your will, powers of attorney, living will, and your HIPAA waiver. For a basic trust, which I often encourage, matter of fact, always encourage for families with young children, it's about $1,600 for an individual and about $2,500 for a married couple.
Great. Mark, I think that this was a really good estate planning 101 session. If folks have additional questions, what's the best way for them to reach you?
So I am available by email, which is mt@gertzberglaw.com, or you can call me directly at 440-571-7773.
And we have a team, an estate planning team here. There's paralegals that you work with. There's junior attorneys that we work with to keep our clients' costs down. Don't wait to call a lawyer who is trained in estate planning and have that discussion with them. Don't wait and don't put it off. Just get it done, because when that day comes, the last thing you want is for family members to be arguing over what to do or who gets what. So it is a really important conversation to have, so have it. Folks, thanks for tuning in. We will catch you next time.
These 10-minute legal talks are brought to you by the Gertzberg Law Firm, changing the character of the attorney-client relationship in business from a cost center to a trusted advisor. Drawing from their complex litigation and transactional experiences as members of large law firms, in-house counsel, and as business owners themselves, the Gertzberg Law Firm's award-winning attorneys provide clients the benefit of business lawyers with real-life business experience in a wide variety of industries. These talks are not intended to create an attorney-client relationship or to provide legal advice. If you have questions about your particular legal situation, you should contact a legal professional. To reach one of our business law or estate planning attorneys, visit www.gertzberglaw.com or call us at 440-571-7777.